Chapter 46. Thomas couldn't figure out what Teresa meant by her last statement. What had he done to her? But his mind went numb as they walked and walked and walked, apparently heading back to Group B's camp. A steady climb uphill, the effort burning his legs. A sheer cliff to their left kept them in the shade as they hiked, but everything was still red and brown and hot. Dry. Dusty. The girls gave him a few sips of water, but he was sure that every drop evaporated before it hit his stomach. They reached a large indentation in the east wall just as the noon sun broke out overhead, a golden ball of fire bent on burning them to ashes. The shallow cave went about 40 feet into the mountain face. It was obvious that this was their camp, and it looked like they'd been there for a day or two. Blankets strewn about, the remains of a fire, some trash piled on the edge. Only 3 people were there when they arrived, girls just like the others, which meant they'd felt they needed almost everyone to kidnap Thomas. With the bows and arrows, the knives and machetes, it seemed almost silly. A few of them would have done just as well. Along the way, Thomas had learned some things. The dark-skinned girl's name was Harriet, and the one who was always with her, with the reddish-blonde hair and white, white skin, was named Sonia. Though he couldn't tell for certain, he guessed that those two had mostly been in charge until Teresa had arrived. They acted with some authority, but always deferred to her in the end.
"Okay," Teresa said. "Let's tie him to that ugly tree."
She pointed at the bone-white skeleton of an oak, its roots still clinging to the rocky soil, even though it had to have been dead for years and years.
"And we might as well feed him so he doesn't moan and groan all day and keep us awake."
"Laying it on a little thick, isn't she?" Thomas thought. Whatever her true intentions, her words had started to get a little ridiculous. And he couldn't deny it anymore. He was really starting to hate her, no matter what she'd said in the beginning. He didn't fight as they tied his torso to the trunk, leaving his hands free. Once they had him good and secure, they gave him a few granola bars and a bottle of water. No one spoke to him or met his gaze. And strangely, if he wasn't mistaken, he noticed that everyone looked a little guilty. He started eating, and as he did, he carefully took in everything around him. His thoughts wandered all over the place as the rest of them began settling in to sleep out the remaining daylight. Something wasn't right about all this. Teresa's display certainly didn't seem like an act. It never had. Was it possible that she was doing the exact opposite of what she'd told him? Making him think he should trust her, when her real plan had been, and was too. With a jolt, he remembered the tag outside her door back in the dorm. The betrayer. He'd completely forgotten about it until that moment. Things started to make more sense. Wicked was the boss here. They were the group's only hope of surviving. If they'd really told her to kill him, would she do it? To save herself? And what was that line she'd spit out about his having done something to her? Could they even be manipulating her thoughts? Making her not like him anymore? Then there was his tattoo and the signs in the city. The tattoo had warned him. The signs had told him he was the real leader. The label next to Teresa's door had been another warning. Still, he had no weapons and he was tied to a tree. Group B outnumbered him by more than 20, and they all had weapons. Real easy. Sighing, he finished up his food and felt a little better physically. And though he didn't quite know how everything added up, he had a new confidence that he was closer to understanding, and that he couldn't quit. Harriet and Sonia had pallets laid out nearby. They kept sneaking looks at him as they readied for sleep. Again, Thomas noticed those odd expressions of shame or guilt. He saw it as an opportunity to fight for his life with words. "You guys don't really want to kill me, do you?" he asked it in a tone that said he'd caught them in a lie. "Have you ever even killed anyone before?" Harriet gave him a harsh glare, stopping just before she laid her head down on a wad of blankets. She propped herself up on her elbow.
"Based on what Teresa told us, we escaped our maze 3 days faster than your group did, lost fewer people and killed more grievers to do it. I think knocking off one little insignificant teenage boy won't be too tough.
Think of the guilt you'll feel. He could only hope the thought would dig at them.
We'll get over it.
She stuck her tongue out at him, actually stuck her tongue out, then put her head down and closed her eyes. Sonia sat cross-legged, looking about as far from sleep as humanly possible.
We don't have a choice. Wicked said that was our only task. If we don't do it, they won't let us in at the safe haven. We'll die out here in the scorch.
Thomas shrugged. Hey, I understand. Sacrifice me to save yourselves. Very noble. She stared at him for a long time. He had to fight not to drop his gaze. She finally looked away and lay down with her back to him. Teresa walked over, her face twisted in annoyance.
What are you talking about?
Nothing, mumbled Harriet.
Tell him to shut up.
Shut up, Teresa said. Thomas huffed a sarcastic laugh. What are you going to do? Kill me if I don't? She didn't say anything, just kept looking at him, her face blank.
Why do you hate me all of a sudden? He asked. What did I do to you?
Sonia and Harriet both had turned to listen, looking back and forth between Thomas and Teresa.
You know what you did, Teresa finally said. So does everyone here. I told them all about it. But even still, I wouldn't have sunk to your level and tried to kill you. We're only doing that because we have no choice. Sorry, life's tough.
Did something just flash in her eyes? Thomas wondered. What was she trying to tell him? What are you talking about, sink to my level? I'd never kill a friend to save my own butt. Never.
Me neither. Which is why I'm glad we're not friends.
She started to turn away. So what did I do to you? Thomas asked quickly. Sorry, I'm kind of having a memory lapse. You know, we have those a lot around here. Remind me. She twisted back around and glared at him with fiery eyes.
Don't insult me. Don't you dare sit there and act like nothing happened. Now shut up, or I'll give you another bruise on that pretty face of yours.
She stomped away, and Thomas kept silent. He shifted until he was somewhat comfortable, his head leaning back on the dead wood of the tree. Everything about this current situation stank, but he was determined to figure it out and survive. Eventually, he slept. Chapter 47. Thomas slept fitfully for a few hours, tossing and turning, trying to find a comfortable position on the hard rock. He finally fell into a deep slumber, and then came the dream. Thomas is 15. He doesn't know how he knows this. Something to do with the timing of the memory. Is it a memory? He and Teresa are standing in front of a massive bank of screens, each one showing various images from the glade and the maze. Some of the views are moving, and he knows why. These camera shots are coming from beetle blades, and every once in a while, they have to change position. When they do, it's like looking through the eyes of a rat.
I can't believe they're all dead, Teresa says.
Thomas is confused. Once again, he doesn't quite understand what's happening. He's inside this boy who's supposed to be him, but he doesn't know what Teresa's talking about. Obviously not the gladers. On one screen, he can see Minho and Newt walking toward the forest. On another, Gally sitting on a bench. Then Albie yelling at someone Thomas doesn't recognize.
We knew it would happen, he finally responds, not sure why he said it. It's still hard to take.
They aren't looking at each other, just analyzing the screens.
Now it's up to us, and the people in the barracks.
That's a good thing, Thomas says.
I almost feel as sorry for them as I do for the gladers.
Almost. Thomas wonders what this means as his younger dream version clears his throat.
Do you think we've learned enough? Do you really think we can pull this off with all the original creators dead? We have to, Tom.
Teresa steps over to him and grabs his hand. He looks down at her, but he can't read her expression.
Everything's in place. We have a year to train the replacements and get ready. But it's not right. How can we ask them to...
Teresa rolls her eyes and squeezes his hand so hard it hurts.
They know what they're getting into. No more talking like that.
Yeah.
Somehow Thomas knows this version of himself and the vision he's seeing feels dead inside. His words mean nothing.
All that matters now are the patterns, the kill zone, nothing else.
Teresa nodded.
No matter how many die or get hurt, if the variables don't work, they'll end up the same anyway. Everyone will.
The patterns, Thomas says. Teresa squeezes his hand.
The patterns.
When he woke up, the light dimming to a dull gray as the sun sank to a horizon he couldn't see, Harriet and Sonia were sitting just a few feet from him, both staring at him strangely. Good evening, he said with false enthusiasm, the troubling dream still fresh in his mind. Can I help you, ladies?
We want to know what you know,
Harriet said quietly. The lingering fog of sleep quickly vanished.
Why should I help you?
He wanted to sit and think about what he'd dreamed, but he knew something had changed. He could see it in Harriet's gaze, and he couldn't pass up the chance to save himself.
I don't think you have much choice, Harriet said. But if you share whatever you've learned or figured out, maybe we can help you.
Thomas looked around for Teresa but couldn't see her.
Where is...
Sonia interrupted him.
She said she wanted to scout the area to see if your friends followed us. Been gone for about an hour.
In his mind, Thomas could see the Teresa of his dream. Watching those screens, talking about dead creators and the kill zone, talking about patterns. How did it all fit together?
Forget how to talk.
His eyes focused on Sonia.
No. Does this mean you guys are having second thoughts about killing me?
The word sounded stupid to him, and he wondered how many people in the history of the world had ever asked a question like that. Harriet smirked.
Don't go jumping to conclusions, and don't think we've gone all righteous. Let's just say we have our doubts and want to talk, but your odds are slim.
Sonia picked up her line of thought.
The smartest thing right now seems to be to do what we were told. There are a lot more of us than you. I mean, come on. If it was your decision, what would you do?
Pretty sure I'd choose the option of not killing myself.
Don't be a jerk. This isn't funny. If you could choose, and the two options were you die or all of us die, which one would you pick? This is all about you or us.
Her face showed she was very serious, and the question hit Thomas like a thump to his chest. She was right, on some level. If that really would happen, they'd all die if they didn't get rid of him, then how could he expect them not to do it?
You going to answer? Sonia pushed.
I'm thinking.
He paused, wiped some sweat off his forehead. Once again, the dream tried to creep to the front of his mind, and he had to push it back.
Okay, I'm being honest here, I promise. If I were in your shoes, I'd choose not to kill me.
Harriet rolled her eyes.
Easy for you to say, since it's your life on the line.
It's not just that. I think it's some kind of test, and maybe you're not really supposed to do it.
Thomas's heartbeat picked up. He really did mean what he said, but he doubted they'd believe him even if he tried to explain it.
Maybe we should share what we know. Figure something out.
Harriet and Sonia exchanged a long look. Sonia finally nodded. Then Harriet said,
We've had our doubts about this whole thing from the beginning. Something about it isn't right. So yeah, you better talk. But let us get everybody over here first.
They stood up to go rouse the others.
Hurry then,
Thomas said, wondering if he really did have a chance to get out of this mess.
We better do this before Teresa gets back.
Chapter 48 It didn't take long for them to gather everyone. Thomas figured the intrigue of hearing what the dead guy walking had to say was just too good to pass up. The girl stood in a tight group in front of him. He remained tied to the ugly, lifeless tree.
All right, Harriet said. You talk first.
Then we will.
Thomas nodded and cleared his throat. He began talking even though he hadn't totally planned what to say yet. All I know about your group is what I learned from Eris,
and it seems like we all went through pretty much the same thing inside the maze. But since we escaped, lots of things have been different. And I'm not sure what you know about Wicked.
Sonya cut in. Not much.
This encouraged Thomas, made him feel like he had an advantage. And it seemed a big mistake for Sonya to have admitted what she did.
Well, I've learned a lot about them. All of us are special in some way. We're being tested or something because they have a plan for us.
He paused then, but no one showed much of a reaction, so he went on.
A lot of things they're doing to us don't make sense because they're just part of the trials, what Wicked calls the variables, seeing how we react in certain situations. I don't understand all of it, not even close, but I think this whole thing about killing me is just another layer, or another lie. So, I think this is just another variable to see what we'll all do.
In other words, Harriet said, you want us to risk our lives because of this brilliant deduction?
Don't you see? Killing me has no point. Maybe it's a test for you, I don't know. But I do know that I can help you if I'm alive, not if I'm dead.
Or, Harriet replied, we're being tested to see if we have the guts to kill our competitor's leader. Isn't that the whole point? See which group succeeds? Weed out the weak and leave the strong?
I haven't even been the leader. Minho has.
Thomas shook his head adamantly.
No, think about this. How are you showing any strength by killing me? I'm way outnumbered, and you have all these weapons. How does that prove who's stronger?
Then what does it have to do with?
A girl from the back called out. Thomas paused, choosing his words carefully. I think it's a test to see if you'll think for yourself, change plans, make rational decisions. And the more of us there are, the better odds we have of making it to the safe haven. Killing me makes no sense, does no one any good. You've proven any power you needed to by capturing me. Show them you won't blindly take it all the way. He stopped, relaxed back against the tree. He couldn't think of anything else. It was up to them now. He'd given it his best shot.
Interesting stuff, Sonya said. Sounds a lot like something a person who's desperate not to die would say.
Thomas shrugged.
I really feel like it's the truth. I think that if you kill me, you'll have failed the real test Wicked is throwing at you.
Yeah, I bet you think that, Harriet said. She stood up. Look, to be honest, we've been thinking the same types of things, but we wanted to see what you had to say. Sun should be down soon, and I'm sure Teresa will be back any minute. We'll talk about it when she gets here.
Thomas spoke up quickly, worried that Teresa wouldn't be swayed.
No, I mean, she's the one who seems the most gung-ho about killing me.
He said this, even though deep down he hoped he didn't mean it. As badly as she treated him, surely she wasn't serious about taking it all the way to murder.
I think you guys should make the decision.
Calm down, Harriet said, a half-smile on her face. If we decide not to kill you, there's nothing she can freaking do about it. But if we...
She stopped, a strange look flashing across her face. Was she worried she'd said too much?
We'll figure it out.
Thomas tried not to show his relief. He might have appealed to their pride a little bit, but he tried not to let his hopes get too high. Thomas watched as the girls gathered their belongings and packed them into backpacks. Where'd they get those, he wondered, readying for the night's journey to wherever that might be. Murmurs and whispers of conversation floated through the air as people kept glancing his way, obviously discussing what he'd said. The darkness grew deeper and deeper, and Teresa finally appeared from the direction they'd come in earlier that day. She noticed right away that something was different, probably by the way everyone kept looking between her and Thomas.
What?
She asked, the same hard look on her face she'd worn since the day before. It was Harriet who answered.
We need to talk.
Teresa looked confused, but went to the far side of the recess in the cliff with the rest of the group. Furious whispers immediately filled the air, but Thomas couldn't make out a word anybody said. His stomach clenched in anticipation of the verdict. From where he stood, he could see that the conversation had started to get passionate, and Teresa looked as riled up as anyone. He watched her expression intensify as she tried to make some point. It seemed like it was her against the rest of them, which made Thomas very nervous. Finally, just as nightfall was almost complete, Teresa turned, stomped from the group of girls, and started walking away from the camp, heading north. She had her spear slung over one shoulder, a backpack over the other. Thomas watched her go until she disappeared between the narrow walls of the pass. He glanced back at the group, many of whom looked relieved, and Harriet came walking over. Without saying a word, she knelt down and untied the rope securing him to the tree.
"Well?" Thomas finally asked. "Did you guys decide anything?"
Harriet didn't answer until she'd completely freed him. Then she sat back on her heels and looked at him, her dark eyes reflecting the faint light of the stars and moon.
"It's your lucky day. We decided not to kill your puny butt after all. It can't be a coincidence that we've all been thinking the same things deep down."
Thomas didn't feel the expected rush of relief. In that moment, he realized that he'd known that was what they would decide all along.
"But I tell you what," Harriet said as she stood up, holding a hand out to help him do the same.
"Teresa does not like you. I'd watch my back around her if I were you."
Thomas let Harriet pull him up, confusion and hurt warring for dominance inside him. Teresa really did want him dead. Chapter 49. Thomas was quiet as he ate with Group B and prepared to leave. Soon they started making their way through the dark pass of the mountains, heading for the safe haven that was supposed to wait on the other side. It felt odd to suddenly be friendly with these people after what they'd done to him, but they acted like nothing unusual had ever happened. They treated him like, well, like one of the girls. But he did keep his distance a little, hanging toward the back, wondering if he could fully trust their change of heart about him. What was he supposed to do? Even if Harriet and the others let him leave, should he try to find his own group, Minho and Newt and everyone else? He desperately wanted to be with his friends and Brenda again. But he knew time was running out and he had no food or water to make it on his own. He had to hope they'd find their own way to the safe haven. So he kept walking, staying close to Group B, but not too close. A couple of hours went by, nothing but tall cliffs of stone and the crunching of dirt and rock under his feet to keep him company. It felt good to move again, to stretch his legs and muscles. The deadline was fast approaching, though, and who knew what obstacle might spring up next? Or had the girls planned something else for him? He thought a lot about the dreams he'd been having, but still couldn't put enough together to truly understand what was going on. Harriet drifted back until the two of them were walking side by side.
"Sorry we dragged you through the desert in a bag," she said.
He couldn't see her face in the dimming light very well, but he imagined a smirk there.
"Ah, no problem. It felt good to take a load off for a while."
Thomas knew he had to play the part, show some humor. He couldn't trust the girls completely yet, but he had no other options. She laughed, a sound that put him at ease a bit.
"Yeah, well, the man from Wicked gave us very specific instructions about you. But it was Teresa who got all obsessed about it. Almost like killing you was her idea."
This dug at Thomas, but he finally had a chance to learn some things, and he wasn't going to let that go. "Did the guy have a white suit and kind of look like a rat turned human?"
"Yeah," she said without hesitating.
"Same guy who talked to your group?"
Thomas nodded. "What were the specific instructions he gave you?"
"Well, most of our trip had been through underground tunnels. That's why you didn't see us in the desert. The first thing we were supposed to do was that weird thing where you and Teresa spoke in that building on the south side of the city. Remember?"
Thomas's stomach fell. She'd been with her group at that point?
Yeah, I remember.
"Well, you've probably figured it out, but all of that was an act, kind of a prepper to give you some false security. She even told us they somehow controlled her long enough to make her kiss you. Is that true?"
Thomas stopped walking, bent down and put his hands on his knees. Something had sucked the breath right out of him. That was it. He'd officially and completely lost any trace of doubt. Teresa had turned against him. Or maybe she had never really been on his side.
I know this sucks, Harriet said softly. It seems like you used to feel really close to her.
Thomas stood up again, slowly sucked in a long breath.
I had hoped it was the other way around, that they were forcing her to try to hurt us, that she broke away long enough to kiss me.
Harriet put a hand on his arm.
Ever since she joined us, she's made you out to be a monster who did something really awful to her, but she'd never tell us what it was. But I gotta tell you, you're not anything like how she described you. That's probably the real reason we changed our minds.
Thomas closed his eyes and tried to calm his heart. Then he shook it off and started walking again.
Okay, tell me the rest. I need to hear it.
All of it. Harriet got in stride with him. Everything else about the instructions to kill you had to do with catching you in the desert like we did and bringing you back here. We were even told to keep you in the bag until we got out of Group A's sight. Then the big day was supposed to be the day after tomorrow. There's supposed to be a place built into the mountain on the north side. A special place to kill you.
Thomas wanted to stop again, but kept his feet moving.
A place? What does that mean?
I don't know. He just told us we'd know what to do when we got there.
She paused, then snapped her fingers, as if she'd just thought of something.
I bet that's where she went earlier.
Why? How close are we to the other side?
No idea, actually.
They fell into silence and kept walking. It took longer than Thomas would have thought. They were in the middle of the second night of marching when shouts up ahead announced that they'd reached the end of the pass. Thomas, who'd stayed at the back of the group, broke into a run to catch up. He desperately wanted to see what lay on the north side of the range. One way or another, his fate waited there. The group of girls had clustered in a wide swath of broken rock that fanned out from the narrow canyon of the pass before dropping in a steep slope to the bottom of the mountain far below. The three-quarter moon shone down on the valley in front of them, making it look dark, purple, and eerie, and very flat, with nothing for miles and miles but sparse, dead land. Absolutely nothing. No sign of anything that could be a safe haven. And they were supposed to be within a few miles of it.
Maybe we just can't see it.
Thomas didn't know who said it, but he knew every person there understood exactly why she did. Trying to hold on to hope.
Yeah, Harriet added, sounding upbeat. It might just be another entrance to one of their underground tunnels. I'm sure it's there.
How many more miles do you think we have left?
Sonia asked.
Can't be more than 10, based on where we started and how far the man said we had to go, Harriet answered.
Probably more like 7 or 8. I thought we'd come out over here and we'd see a nice big building with a smiley face on it.
Thomas had been searching the darkness the whole time, but he couldn't see anything either. Just a sea of black stretching to the horizon, where it seemed like a curtain of stars had been pulled down. And no sign of Teresa anywhere.
Well, Sonia announced, not much choice but to keep heading north. We should have known better than to expect something easy. Maybe we can make it to the bottom of the mountain by sunrise. Sleep on flat ground.
The others agreed with her and were just about to set off down a barely visible footpath leading from the fan of rock when Thomas spoke up.
Where's Teresa?
Harriet looked back at him, the moonlight bathing her face in a pale luminescence.
At this point, I don't really care. If she's a big enough girl to go running around when she doesn't get her way, she's big enough to catch up and find us when she gets over it. Come on.
They started off, heading down the switchback-laden path, the loose soil and rock crunching underfoot. Thomas couldn't help but take a look behind him, searching the mountain face and the narrow entrance to the pass for signs of Teresa. He was so confused about everything, but still had a strange urge to see her. He gazed across the dark slopes, but saw only dim shadows and reflections of the moonlight's glow. He turned and started walking, almost relieved he hadn't spotted her. The group made their way down the mountain, crisscrossing back and forth on the trail in silence. Thomas lingered in the back again,
surprised at how blank his mind felt, how numb. He had absolutely no idea where his friends were, no idea what dangers might be waiting for him. After an hour or so of traveling, his legs starting to burn from the awkward downhill walk, the group came across a pocket of dead trees that arrowed up the mountain in a big swath. It almost looked as if at one time a waterfall might have irrigated the odd formation of trees. Though if it had, the last drop had long since surrendered to the scorch. Thomas, still last in line, was just passing the far side of the trees when a voice spoke his name, startling him so much he almost tripped. He turned sharply to see Teresa step out from behind a thick knot of white wood, spear gripped in her right hand, her face hidden in shadow. The others must not have heard, because they kept walking.
"Teresa?" he whispered. "What?"
He didn't even know what to say.
"Tom, we need to talk,"
she responded, almost sounding like the girl he thought he knew.
"Don't worry about them, just come with me."
She gestured to the trees behind her with a quick jerk of her head. He looked back to the girls of Group B, still heading away from him, then turned to face Teresa again.
"Maybe we should... just come on. The act is over."
She turned away without waiting for a response and stepped into the lifeless forest. Thomas thought hard for 2 whole seconds, his mind spinning in confusion, instinct screaming at him not to do it. But he followed her. Chapter 50. The trees might have been dead, but their branches still pulled on Thomas's clothes and scratched at his skin. The wood shone white in the moonlight, and the streaks and pools of shadow across the ground gave the whole place a haunted feel. Teresa kept walking in silence, floating up the mountainside like an apparition. Finally, he found the courage to speak.
"Where are we going? And you really expect me to believe all that was an act? Why didn't you stop when everybody else agreed not to kill me?"
But her reply was strange. Barely turning her head, she asked,
"You've met Eris, right?"
She didn't break stride, just kept moving. Thomas stopped for a second, completely taken aback.
"Eris? How do you know about him? What's he got to do with this?"
He hurried to catch up with her again, curious but dreading the answer for some reason. She didn't respond right away, picking her way through a particularly tight pack of branches. One flew back and smacked him in the face after she let it fly. Once, though, she finally stopped and turned to him, right where a shaft of moonlight illuminated her face. She looked unhappy.
"I happen to know Eris very well," she said in a tight voice. "Much better than you're going to like. Not only was he a big part of my life before the maze, he and I can speak in our minds just like you and I used to do. Even when I was in the glade, we communicated all the time, and we knew they'd eventually put us back together."
Thomas searched for a response. What she'd said was so unexpected, he thought it must be a joke, another trick by Wicked. She waited, arms folded, as if she enjoyed seeing him struggle to speak.
"You're lying," he finally said. "That's all you do is lie. I don't understand why or what's going on, but—"
"Oh, come on, Tom," she said. "How could you possibly be so stupid? After all that's happened to you, how could anything surprise you anymore? Everything about us was part of some ridiculous test, and it's over. Eris and I are going to do what we were told to do, and life goes on. Wicked's all that matters now. That's it."
"What are you talking about?"
He couldn't have felt any emptier. Teresa looked past him over his shoulder. He heard the snap of breaking twigs on the ground, and somehow he held on to his dignity enough to not turn around to see who had snuck up on him.
"Tom," Teresa said, "Eris is right behind you, and he has a very big knife. Try anything, and he'll slice your neck. You're coming with us, and you're going to do exactly what we tell you. Understand?"
Thomas stared at her, hoping the rage he felt inside showed clearly on his face. He'd never felt so angry in his life, what he could remember of it.
"Say hi, Eris," she said. And then, the worst thing yet,
she smiled.
"Hi, Tommy,"
the boy said from behind. It was definitely him,
just not as friendly as before.
Such a thrill to be with you again.
The point of his knife just touched Thomas's back. Thomas remained silent.
Well, Teresa said, at least you're acting like a grown-up about this. Just keep following me. We're almost there.
Where are we going? Thomas asked in a steely voice.
You'll find out soon enough.
She turned and started walking through the trees again, using her spear like a staff. Thomas hurried to follow before Eris got the satisfaction of pushing him. The trees got thicker and closer together, and the moonlight flitted away. Darkness pressed in, sucking light and life right out of him. They reached a cave, the thick copse of trees serving as a tight wall at its entrance. Thomas didn't have any warning. One minute they were picking their way through prickly branches, the next they were in a tall, narrow hole in the side of the mountain. A dull light source shone from deep inside, a sickly green rectangle that made Teresa look like a zombie when she moved to the side for the other two to enter. Eris stepped around him, his blade aimed like a gun at Thomas's chest, as he backed to the wall opposite Teresa and leaned against it. Thomas could do nothing but look back and forth between them. Two people who every instinct had told him were his friends. Until now.
Well, we're here,
Teresa said, looking at Eris. He didn't take his eyes off Thomas.
Yep, we're here all right.
You're serious about him talking the others into sparing him? What is he, some kind of super psychologist?
It kind of helped, actually. Made it easier to get him here.
Teresa threw a condescending glance toward Thomas, then crossed the cave to Eris. As Thomas watched, she stood on her toes to kiss Eris on the cheek and grinned.
I'm so glad we're finally back together.
Eris smiled. He shot Thomas a look of warning, then risked looking away long enough to tilt his head toward Teresa and kiss her on the lips. Thomas tore his eyes away and closed them. Her pleas for him to trust her, her quick whisper to hang in there. It had all been to get him here, to bring him more easily to this point, so that she could fulfill some evil purpose concocted by Wicked. Get it over with, he finally said, not daring to open his eyes again. He didn't want to know what they were doing, why they were quiet, but he wanted them to think he'd given up.
Just get it over with.
When they didn't answer, he couldn't help but take a peek. They were whispering to each other, stealing kisses between words. Something like burning oil filled his stomach. He looked away again, focusing on the odd source of light in the back of the cave. A large rectangle of pale green, set into the dark stone, pulsed with an ethereal glow. It was as tall as an average man, maybe 4 feet wide. Stains streaked across its dull surface, a grimy window to something that looked like radioactive sludge, glowing and dangerous. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Teresa step away from Eris, their love fest evidently over. He looked at her, wondering if his eyes showed just how much she had crushed him.
Tom, she said, if it helps, I'm really sorry I hurt you. I did what I had to do back in the maze, and being all buddy-buddy seemed like my best shot at getting the memories we needed to figure out that code and escape. And I didn't have much choice here in the Scorch. All we had to do was get you here to pass the trials. And it's either you or us.
Teresa paused for a second, and there was a strange glint in her eye.
Eris is my best friend, Tom, she said calmly, evenly.
And that was what finally made Thomas crack.
I don't care,
he screamed, though nothing could have been further from the truth.
I'm just saying. If you care about me, then you should understand why I'd be willing to do whatever it takes to make it through this and keep him safe. Wouldn't you have done the same for me?
Thomas couldn't believe how far away he felt from the girl he'd once thought was his best friend. Even in all of his memories, it was always the two of them.
What is this? Are you trying to come up with all the ways possible in the universe to hurt me? Just shut your shuck mouth and do whatever it is you brought me here to do.
His chest heaved with angry breaths, his heart thumping a deadly pace.
Fine, she replied. Eris, let's open the door.
Time for Tom to go.
Chapter 51. Thomas was done talking to either of them, but he certainly wasn't going down without a fight. He resolved to wait and watch for the best opportunity. Aris kept his knife pointed at him as Teresa made her way toward the big rectangle of illuminated green glass. Thomas couldn't deny his curiosity about the door. She reached a point where the glow silhouetted her whole body. It made her edges fuzzy, as if she were dissolving. She walked across the cave until she'd left the light completely, then reached for the stone wall, started punching a finger on what had to be some sort of keypad that Thomas couldn't see. She finished up and stepped back toward him.
"We'll see if that actually works," Aris said. "It will," Teresa replied.
A loud pop sounded, followed by a sharp hiss. Thomas watched as the right edge of the glass began to swing outward like a door. As it opened, wispy streams of white mist swirled through the widening crack, almost immediately evaporating into nothing. It was like a long-abandoned freezer releasing its cold air into the heat of the night. Darkness lurked inside even as the rectangle of glass continued to emit its strange green radiance. So the door wasn't a window at all, Thomas thought. Just a green door. Maybe toxic waste wasn't in his near future. He hoped. The door finally stopped, thumping with an icy screech against the wall of jagged rock. A pit of black now lay where the door had once been. There wasn't enough light to reveal what lay inside. The mist had completely stopped as well. Thomas felt an abyss of anxiety open up beneath him.
"Do you have a flashlight?" Aris asked.
Teresa put her spear on the ground, then pulled her backpack off and dug through its contents. A moment later, she pulled out a flashlight and flicked it on. Aris nodded back toward the opening.
"Take a look while I watch him." "Don't try anything, Thomas. I'm pretty sure what they have planned for you is easier than getting stabbed to death."
Thomas didn't answer, keeping his pathetic oath to stay silent from here on out. He thought about the knife and whether he could take it from Aris. Teresa had stepped up right to the side of the gaping rectangular hole. She shone her flashlight inside, swept it up and down, left to right. It cut through a fine cloud of mist as she did so, but the dwindling moisture was thin enough to reveal the interior. It was a small room, only several feet deep. Its walls appeared to be made of some silvery metal, their surfaces broken up by small protrusions, maybe an inch high, each ending in a black hole. The little knobs, or spouts, were set about 5 inches apart, making a square grid across the walls. Teresa turned to Aris, flicking off the flashlight as she did so.
"Looks about right," she said.
Aris snapped his head back to look at Thomas, who had been so focused on the strange room he'd missed another chance to do something.
"Exactly like they said it would be."
"So, I guess this is it?" Teresa asked. Aris nodded, then switched his knife to the other hand, holding it more tightly.
"This is it. Thomas, be a good boy and go inside. Who knows? Maybe this is all a big test, and once you're in, they'll let you go, and we can all have a happy reunion."
"Shut up, Aris," Teresa said. It was actually the first thing she'd said in quite some time that didn't make Thomas want to punch her. She then turned back to Thomas, avoiding his eyes.
"Let's get this over with."
Aris waved his blade, indicating that Thomas should walk forward.
"Come on, don't make me drag you in."
Thomas looked at him, struggling to keep a blank expression as his mind spun in a million directions. A surge of panic boiled inside him. It was now or never. Fight or die. He turned his gaze to the open doorway and started slowly walking toward it. 3 steps, and he'd halved the distance. Teresa had straightened, her arms tensed in case he caused trouble. Aris kept his weapon trained on Thomas's neck. Another step. Another. Now Aris stood directly to his left, just 2 or 3 feet away. Teresa was behind him, out of sight. The open doorway and the odd silver room with walls covered in holes right in front of him. He stopped, looked sideways at Aris. What did Rachel look like as she bled to death? It was a gamble, a pitch to throw him off. Shocked and hurt, Aris froze, giving Thomas the split second he needed. He jumped toward the other boy and swung his left arm in an arc to smack the knife out of his hand. It clattered across the rocks. Thomas slammed his right fist into Aris's stomach, sending him to the ground, desperately trying to suck in a breath. The click of metal against rock stopped Thomas from kicking the boy at his feet. He looked up to see that Teresa had picked up her spear. They locked eyes for an instant, then she charged him. Thomas threw his hands up to protect himself, but it was too late. The butt of the weapon swung through the air and smacked him on the side of the head. Stars floated before his eyes as he fell, fighting to stay conscious. As soon as he hit the ground, he scrambled to his hands and knees to get away. But he heard Teresa scream, and a second later, the wood came crashing down on the top of his skull. With a thump, Thomas collapsed again. Something wet oozed through his hair and trickled onto both temples. Pain tore through his head as if an axe had been driven straight into his brain. It spread to the rest of his body, making him nauseated. He somehow pushed off the ground and flopped onto his back to see Teresa with the weapon raised above her once more.
"Get in the room, Thomas," she said through heavy breaths. "Get in the room, or I'll hit you again, I swear. I'll keep doing it till you pass out or bleed to death."
Aris had recovered and gotten back to his feet. He stood right next to her. Thomas reared both legs back and kicked out, connecting with a knee on both of them. They screamed and crumpled, falling on top of each other. The physical effort sent a horrible rush of pain raging through Thomas. White flashes blinded him. The world was spinning. He groaned as he struggled to move, got back on his stomach, tried to get his hands under himself. He'd barely pushed a few inches off the ground when Aris landed on his back, slamming him down. Soon the boy's arm wrapped around Thomas's neck, squeezing.
"You're going in that room,"
Aris spit in his ear.
"Help me, Teresa!"
Thomas couldn't find any strength to fight them off. The double blow to his head had somehow sapped him of everything, as if all his muscles had gone dormant because his brain didn't have enough energy to tell them what to do. Soon, Teresa had grabbed both of his arms. She started dragging him toward the open doorway, Aris pushing him. Thomas kicked feebly. Rocks dug into his skin.
"Don't do this,"
he whispered, giving in to desperation. Every word sent a surge of pain across his nerves.
"Please."
All he saw now were flashes of white on black. A concussion, he realized. He had a terrible, terrible concussion. He was barely aware of his body crossing the threshold, of Teresa resting his arms against the cool metal of the back wall, stepping over him, helping Aris flip his legs up and over so that he now lay in a heap, facing the side. Thomas couldn't even find the strength to look at them.
"No,"
he said, but it was merely a whisper. The image of the sick boy, Ben, being banished back in the glade, swam into his brain. An odd time to think it, but now he knew how that kid had felt in those last seconds before the wall slammed shut, trapping him in the maze forever.
"No,"
he repeated. It was so quiet, he couldn't imagine they heard him. He ached from head to toe.
"You're so stubborn,"
he heard Teresa say.
"You had to make it harder on yourself, harder on all of us."
"Teresa,"
Thomas whispered. He dug through the pain and tried to call out to her telepathically, even though it hadn't worked in a long time.
"Teresa, I'm sorry, Tom,"
she answered back, in his mind once again.
"But thanks for being our sacrifice."
He hadn't realized the door was swinging closed, but it slammed shut, just as that last horrible word floated across his darkening thoughts. Chapter 52. The back of the door they'd shut on him glowed green, turning the small room into a creepy, sickening prison. He might have cried, might have gushed tears and snot and wailed like a baby if his head didn't hurt so much. The pain drilled through his skull, and his eyes felt as if they were boiling in lava. But even then, through all that, the deeper ache of truly losing Teresa gnawed away at his heart. He just couldn't let himself cry. He lost all concept of time as he lay there. It was as if whoever was behind it all wanted to give him a chance to reflect on what had happened while he waited for the end. On how Teresa's message to trust her no matter what had ended up being a cruel trick that only magnified her two-faced treachery. An hour passed. Maybe two or three. Maybe only 30 minutes. He had no idea. And then the hissing started. The faint light of the glowing door revealed sprays of mist shooting from the holes that dotted the metal walls in front of him. He turned his head, sending a fresh wave of pain across his skull, and saw that all the openings were expelling similar jets of fog. And it all hissed like a squirming nest of poisonous vipers. "So this is it," he thought. After everything he'd been through, after all the mysteries and fighting and fleeting moments of hope, they were just going to kill him with some kind of poison gas? Stupid. That was what this was. Stupid. He'd battled grievers and cranks, survived a gunshot and infection. Wicked. They were the ones who'd saved him. And now they were just going to gas him to death? He sat up, actually crying out from the jolt of pain it caused. He looked around, looked for anything he might be able to... Tired. So tired. Something in his chest felt wrong. Sick. The gas. Tired. Hurt. Body exhausted. Breathing in gas. Couldn't help himself. So tired. Inside him. Wrong. Teresa, why did it have to end that way? Tired. Somewhere on the edge of his consciousness, he was aware of his head thumping against the floor. Betrayal. So tired. Chapter 53. Thomas didn't know if he was dead or alive, but it felt like he was asleep. Aware of himself, but as if through a haze, he slipped into yet another memory dream. Thomas is 16. He's standing in front of Teresa and some girl he doesn't recognize. And Eris. Eris? All three of them are looking at him with grim faces. Teresa is crying. "It's time to go," Thomas says. Eris nods. "Into the swipe, then into the maze." Teresa does nothing but wipe away some tears. Thomas reaches out a hand, and Eris shakes it. Then Thomas does the same with the girl he doesn't know. Then Teresa rushes forward and pulls him into an embrace. She's sobbing, and Thomas realizes that he's also crying. His tears wet her hair as he hugs her tightly. "You have to go now," Eris says. Thomas looks at him, waits, tries to enjoy this moment with Teresa, his last moment of full memory. They won't be like this again for a very long time. Teresa looks up at him.
"It's going to work. It's all going to work."
"I know," Thomas says. He feels a sadness that makes every last bit of him ache. Eris opens a door and beckons for Thomas to follow him. Thomas does, but manages to look back at Teresa one last time. Tries to look hopeful. "See you tomorrow," he says. Which is true, and it hurts. The dream faded, and Thomas fell into the blackest sleep of his life. Chapter 54. Whispers in the dark. That was what Thomas heard when he began returning to consciousness. Low but harsh, like sandpaper rubbing across his eardrums. He didn't understand any of it. It was so dark it took him a second to realize that his eyes were open. Something cool and hard pressed against his face. The ground. He hadn't moved since the gas had knocked him out. Shockingly, his head didn't hurt anymore. In fact, nothing did. Instead, a feeling of refreshed euphoria swam through him, almost made him dizzy. Maybe he was just happy to be alive. He got his hands under himself and pushed up into a sitting position. A look around did nothing, not even the faintest glimmer of light broke up the utter darkness. He wondered what had happened to the green glow of the door that Teresa had shut on him. Teresa. His elation drained away, remembering what she'd done to him. But then, he wasn't dead, unless the afterlife was just a crappy room of blackness. He rested for a few minutes, letting his mind wake up and settle before he finally got to his feet and started feeling around. Three cool metal walls with evenly spaced upraised holes. One smooth wall that felt like plastic. He was definitely in that same little room. He pounded on the door. Hey! Anybody out there? His thoughts started spinning. The memory dreams, several now, so much to process, so many questions. The things that had first come back to him with the changing in the maze were slowly starting to come into focus, solidify. He'd been part of Wicked's plans, part of all this. He and Teresa had been close, best friends even. All of it had seemed right, doing these things for the greater good. Only Thomas didn't feel so good about it now. All he felt was anger and shame. How could anything justify what they'd done? What Wicked, what they were doing? Though he certainly didn't think of himself this way, he and the others were just kids, kids. He didn't like himself very much anymore. He wasn't sure when he'd reached this turning point, but something had cracked within him. And then there was Teresa. How could he ever have felt so much for her? Something cracked, then hissed, interrupting his line of thinking. The door started to open, slowly swinging outward. Teresa stood there in the pale light of early morning, her face streaked with tears. As soon as there was enough room, she threw her arms around him, pressing her face against his neck.
I'm so sorry, Tom, she said.
Her tears were wet against his skin.
I'm so sorry. They said they'd kill you if we didn't do everything just like they told us, no matter how horrible. I'm sorry, Tom.
Thomas couldn't answer, couldn't bring himself to hug back. Betrayal. The sign on Teresa's door, the conversation between the people in his dreams, pieces were falling into place. For all he knew, she was just trying to trick him again. The betrayal meant he couldn't trust her anymore, and his heart told him he couldn't forgive her. On some level, he realized that Teresa had kept her initial promise to him after all. She had done those awful things against her will. What she had said in the shack had been true. But he also knew that things could never, never be the same between them. He finally pushed Teresa away. The sincerity in her blue eyes did little to diminish his lingering doubt.
Maybe you should tell me what happened. I told you to trust me, she answered. I told you that bad things would happen to you, but the bad stuff was all an act.
She smiled then, and it was so pretty, Thomas longed to find a way to forget what she'd done.
Yeah, but you didn't seem to struggle too much, beating the clunk out of me with a spear and throwing me into a gas chamber.
He couldn't hide the mistrust raging in his heart. He glanced at Eris, who looked sheepish, like he'd intruded on a private conversation.
I'm sorry, the boy said.
Why didn't you tell me we knew each other before? Thomas responded.
What?
He didn't know what to say.
It was all an act, Tom, Teresa said. You have to believe us. We were promised from the very beginning that you wouldn't die, that this chamber thing had its own purpose, and then it'd be over. I'm so sorry.
Thomas looked back at the still gaping door.
I think I need some time to process all this.
Teresa wanted him to forgive her, for everything to be how it used to be immediately. And instinct told him to hide his bitter feelings, but it was hard.
What happened in there anyway?
Teresa asked. Thomas returned his gaze to her.
How about you talk first, then me?
I think I earned that much. She tried to take his hand, but he moved it, pretending he had an itch on his neck. When he saw the flash of hurt cross her face, he felt the slightest bit of vindication.
Look, she said. You're right. You deserve an explanation. I think it's okay to tell you everything now. Not that we know too much of the why.
Eris cleared his throat, an obvious interjection.
But, we better do it while walking or running. We only have a few hours left. Today is the day.
Those words jarred Thomas completely out of his stupor. He looked down at his watch. Only 5.5 hours remained if Eris was right that they'd reached the end of the 2 weeks. Thomas had kind of lost track himself, not knowing how long he'd been in the chamber. And none of this other stuff mattered at all if they didn't make it to the safe haven. Hopefully, Minho and the others had already found it.
Fine, let's just forget this for now, he said, then changed the subject. Is anything different out there? I mean, I saw it in the dark, but... We know,
Teresa interrupted.
There's no sign of a building, nothing. It looks even worse in the daylight. Just forever and ever a flat wasteland. There isn't a tree or a hill, much less any safe haven.
Thomas looked at Eris, then back at Teresa.
Then what are we supposed to do? Where do we go?
He thought of Minho and Newt, the Gladers, Brenda and Jorge.
Have you seen any of the others?
Eris answered.
All the girls from my group are down there, walking north like they're supposed to, already a couple of miles out. We spotted your friends at the base of the mountain a mile or two west of here. Can't tell for sure, but looks like no one new is missing, and they're heading in the same direction as the girls.
Relief filled Thomas. His friends had made it, hopefully all of them.
We've got to get moving, Teresa said. Just because nothing's there doesn't mean anything. Who knows what Wicked is up to? We just have to do what they told us. Come on.
Thomas had been experiencing a brief moment of wanting to give up, to sit down and forget it all. Let whatever was going to happen, happen. But almost as fast as it came out, it disappeared.
Okay, let's go. But you better tell me everything you know. I will, she answered. You guys up for running once we're out of the dead trees?
Eris nodded, but Thomas rolled his eyes.
Please, I'm a runner.
She raised her eyebrows.
Well then, we'll just have to see who stops before who.
In answer, Thomas stepped out of the small clearing and into the lifeless forest first, refusing to dwell on the storm of memories and emotions that tried to weigh him down. The sky didn't lighten much as morning ticked on. Clouds blew in, gray and thick, so thick that Thomas wouldn't have had any idea of the time if it weren't for his watch. Clouds. Last time that had happened. Maybe this storm wouldn't be so bad. Maybe. Once they left the dense pack of dead trees, they didn't pause. An obvious trail led toward the valley below, switching back and forth like a jagged scar on the mountain face. Thomas estimated it would take a couple of hours just to get to the bottom. Running on the steep, slippery slopes looked like a good way to break an ankle or leg. And if that happened, they'd never make it. The three agreed they'd hike quickly but safely, then book it once they were on flat land. They started down. Eris, then Thomas, then Teresa. The dark clouds churned above them as wind gusted in seemingly every direction. Just as Eris had said, Thomas could see 2 separate packs of people in the desert below. His glader friends, not far from the base of the mountain, then Group B, maybe a mile or two farther out. Once again, Thomas was relieved, and his step felt lighter as he made his way. After the 3rd switchback, Teresa spoke up from behind him.
So, guess I'll start the story from where we left off.
Thomas just nodded. He couldn't believe how good he felt physically. His stomach miraculously full, the pain from being beaten up gone, fresh air and brisk wind to make him feel alive. He had no idea what was in that gas he'd breathed, but it seemed far from poisonous. Still, his mistrust of Teresa itched at him. He didn't want to be overly nice.
It all started when we were talking to each other in the middle of the night, that very first one right after the rescue from the maze. I was kind of half asleep, and then these people were in my room, all dressed funny, creepy, baggy jumpsuits and goggles.
Serious? Thomas asked over his shoulder. They sounded just like the people he'd seen after being shot.
Freaked me out, and I tried calling to you, but it suddenly cut out. The telepathy thing, I mean. I don't know how I knew, but it just vanished. From then until now, it's only come and gone in spurts.
Then she spoke in his mind.
You can hear me perfectly now, right?
Yeah. Did you and Eris really talk while we were in the maze?
Well,
she trailed off, and when Thomas looked back at her, she had a worried look on her face.
What's wrong?
He asked, turning his attention back to the trail before he did something stupid like trip and go tumbling down the mountain.
I don't want to go into that yet.
Go. He stopped himself before he said it out loud.
Go into what?
Teresa didn't answer. Thomas tried as hard as he could to shout inside her mind.
Go into what?
She stayed silent a few seconds longer before finally answering.
Yeah. He and I have been talking since I first showed up in the glade. Mostly while I was in that stupid coma.
Chapter 55. It took every ounce of Thomas's willpower not to stop and turn toward her.
What? Why didn't you tell me about him back in the maze?
As if he needed another reason to dislike either of them.
Why'd you guys stop talking? Eris suddenly asked.
You yapping about me and those pretty little heads of yours?
Impossibly, he didn't seem the least bit sinister at all anymore. It was almost as if everything that had happened back in the dead forest had been a creation of Thomas's imagination. Thomas let out a heavy breath that had been building up in his lungs.
I can't believe this. You two've been...
He stopped, realizing that maybe he wasn't so surprised after all. He'd seen Eris in the splotchy memories of his most recent dream. He was a part of this, whatever this was. And the way they'd acted toward each other in that brief recall seemed to say they were on the same side. Used to be, anyway.
Shuck it, Thomas finally said. Just keep talking.
All right, Teresa said. There's a lot of stuff to explain, so from now on, just keep quiet and listen. Got it?
Thomas's legs were starting to burn from their steady pace on the slope.
Okay, but how do you know when you're talking to me and when you're talking to him? How does that work? It just does. That's like me asking you how you know when you're telling your right leg to move and when you're telling your left leg to move. I just know. It's built into my brain somehow.
We've done it too, man, Eris said. Don't you remember?
Of course I remember,
Thomas muttered, annoyed and frustrated on so many levels. If only he could have everything back, every last memory. He knew the pieces would fall into place, and he could just move forward. He couldn't fathom why Wicked felt it was so important to keep their minds clean of memory. And why the occasional leakage lately? Was that on purpose or on accident? A lingering effect of the changing? Too many questions. Too many shuck questions, all without answers.
All right, he finally said. I'll keep my mouth and brain shut. Keep going. We can talk about Eris and me later. I don't even remember what we spoke about. I lost almost everything when I woke up. Our comas had to be part of the variables, so maybe we could communicate just so we wouldn't go crazy. I mean, we were part of setting it all up, right?
Setting it all up? Thomas asked. I don't... Teresa reached forward and swatted him on the back.
Thought you were going to be quiet.
Yeah, Thomas grumbled.
Anyway, those people came into my room dressed in those creepy outfits, and my telepathy with you cut off. I was scared and only half awake. Part of me thought it was just a bad nightmare. Then the next thing I knew, they put something over my mouth that smelled horrible, and then I passed out. When I woke up, I was lying in a bed in a different room, and a bunch of people were sitting in chairs on the opposite side of this weird glass wall. I couldn't see it until I touched it, almost like a force field or something.
Yeah, Thomas said. We had something like that, too.
So then they started talking to me.
That's when they told me this whole plan of what Eris and I had to do to you. And they expected me to tell him. By, you know, speaking in his mind, even though he was now with your group. Our group. Group A. They took me from my room and sent me to be with Group B. Then they told us about the mission to the safe haven, about having the flare. We were scared, confused, but we had no choice. We went through these underground tunnels until we got to the mountains. We avoided the city altogether. When you and I met in that little building, and then everything that happened from the time we came down to you in the valley with all those weapons, all of that was planned. Thomas thought about the sketchy memories he'd had in his dreams. Something told him he'd known that a scenario like this might need to happen before he ever went to the glade and the maze. He had 100 questions to ask Teresa, but decided to hold back for a little while longer. They turned at another switchback, then Teresa continued. I only know 2 things for sure. One, they said that if I did anything against their plan, they'd kill you. Said they had other options, whatever that means. The second thing I know is that the reason for all this was that you had to truly and absolutely feel betrayed. The whole purpose of what we did to you was to ensure that that happened. Again, Thomas thought of the memories. He and Teresa had both used the word patterns right before he left her. What did it mean? So? Teresa asked after they'd walked in silence for a while. So what? Thomas replied. So what do you think? That's it? That's your whole explanation? I'm supposed to feel all happy now?
Tom, I couldn't take any chances. I was convinced they'd kill you unless I went along. No matter what, in the end, you had to feel like I'd completely betrayed you. That's why I put so much into it. But why this was all so important, I have no idea.
Thomas realized suddenly that all this information had started another headache.
Well, you sure were good at it. What about in that building when you kissed me? And why did Eris need to be involved in all this?
Teresa grabbed his arm and made him stop and turn to face her.
They had everything calculated, all for the variables. I don't know how it all fits together.
Thomas slowly shook his head.
Well, none of this crap makes any sense to me.
And excuse me for feeling a little ticked off.
Did it work?
Huh?
For some reason, they wanted you betrayed, and it worked, right?
Thomas paused, looked into her blue eyes for a long time.
Yeah, it did. I'm sorry for what I did. But you're alive. And so am I. And so is Eris.
Yeah, he repeated.
He really didn't like talking to her anymore.
Wicked got what they want, and I got what I want.
Teresa looked at Eris, who'd kept walking for a while and now stood down on the next level of the path.
Eris, turn around, face the valley.
What?
He replied. He looked confused.
Why?
Just do it.
She didn't have the mean streak in her voice anymore. Hadn't since the gas chamber. But if anything, that made Thomas even more suspicious. What was she up to now? Eris sighed and rolled his eyes, but did what she said, turning his back to them. Teresa didn't hesitate. She wrapped her arms around Thomas's neck, pulling him in. He didn't have enough will to resist. They kissed. But nothing stirred inside Thomas. He felt nothing.